We have a crisis of underprovision of housing. Calculations that I've done suggest that over the last 30 years, we've actually built between 500,000 and 600,000 houses too few. So we've got an accumulated deficit of decent housing even before we start to drive housing production up to 50,000 a year. And one of the issues is that there is a complete lack of information out there, really. And the debate has sort of been hijacked by extremist, and I would say posturing, sloganizing. And really, I think a major effort of this report is to try to increase the actual factual content around the debate. So one of the many misconceptions is that we are in danger of concreting over England or Southeast England or wherever it may be. And this first is the information on how much of the proportion of London within the GLA boundaries, Southeast of England, England as a whole, is actually built on. And you see, when I say this to even very knowledgeable people, when I show them this data, which is some the generalised land use data, they're most surprised to discover that something like 65% of the land inside the GLA boundaries is green. It's not built on. It's either greenbelt, agricultural land, or it's gardens or parks or other sorts of open space. And only 28% of the land in London is actually, in any sense, covered by concrete, railways, houses, industrial buildings. So the idea, we couldn't actually concrete over London, let alone concrete over England. There isn't enough concrete in Europe to concrete over London as a whole. There's a lot of land that isn't built on. So that takes us on to the Greenbelt itself. Now, the Greenbelt is widely held to be a sort of inviolate British invention. And I think that the John Prescott to quote at the beginning sort of illustrates that, really. But really, it's an accidental import from continental Europe. This is a map of Vienna in 1857. So continental cities were getting rid of their city walls then, and when they demolished the city walls of Vienna, they were left with a circular city walls, again, round cities, area of potential green space, and there was this proposal to build the Ringerstrasse Park, which was going to be a green belt around Vienna. It was modified in the construction, but that's how the sort of idea of a green circular park came into consciousness. And it was taken up in 1889 in England by Lord Meath, who is an eccentric, very early LCC alderman. And he proposed a green belt or a girdle for London. And his proposal, there's a map of it, as you'll see, essentially was a narrow beltway. He'd visited the US and he'd seen some of the early beltways there, which were wide green avenues, linking existing areas of green space like Richmond Park or Epping Forest or Hampstead Heath in a circle around London. And that's mainly just around the outside of the inner London area. And the idea was not to stop London expanding, but to provide open space, green space, very much needed in the smoky, cramped, congested conditions of 19th century London. And that idea of a sort of green lungs was also echoed in Ebenezer Howard's Garden City ideas in the late 19th century, early 20th century, and it was taken up by the London Society in 1919, and then that was implemented, taken up by the London County Council in 1935 to provide green lungs for London. And in 1938, there was legislation introduced which permitted, enabled councils, particularly London County Council, to actually buy land for public open space around London. And by the late 40s, they actually bought 20,000 hectares of open space for recreation, green lungs for Londoners. And that was the further developed in the 1947 Town and Country Planning Act, which provided for green belts, but it took away the development rights. So essentially what the how the British planning system works is that freehold ownership of property does not contain within it the legal package of the right to develop that property, which of course historically had been part of the package of rights that went with freehold property ownership. But it wasn't implemented until 1955 by Duncan Sands, and by then it had got completely changed into this idea of preventing urban expansion. So this is a quotation from the minister's letter which actually implemented the present-day Green Belt, saying either, if neither green nor particularly attractive scenically, the major function of the Green Belt was to stop further urban development. And that is still now, I mean, that's more or less what the NPP says in current planning policy. It's not to provide open space or green space or protect environmentally valuable land. It is to prevent urban expansion. What you can see is here's the actual green belt, a great swathe of land going from the North Sea to Aylesbury. This is just the boundaries of London, and we're only going to be really examining the bit of the London's green belt which is inside the boundaries of Greater London. And how can you spot the green belt? You can spot it because it's where we're not building houses. Paler the colour, the fewer houses were being built. So the area, the total area of London's green belt is over 500,000 hectares. The area of the GLA area is 160,000 hectares, roughly. It was, as I say, implemented in 1955, and 1955 was essentially a different world. The population was 40% less, real incomes were one-third of their present levels, car ownership, which affects the type of housing that people want and where they want to live, was one-fourteenth of the present level. So it was a completely different world that the current Green Belt was actually designed for, and even then one could argue about its purpose. So the main effect of the Green Belt was to restrict the supply of space. This is the actual effect, and reduce the potential supply of housing, and over time, as people's incomes rose and population increased, to increase the real price of housing. So now in London, housing on conventional measures is less affordable than ever before since there has been data. And you can see this in the sort of politics of the time. The first county plan for Hertfordshire, for example, had a sort of terrible skeletal hand emerging from London, trying to grasp the green heart of Hertfordshire. The point of the Green Belt was to push London's expansion into Hampshire and Northamptonshire and Suffolk and Norfolk, at which it's been very successful. Now, much land within our Green Belt is scenically beautiful, has high amenity, and clearly, no sane person would argue it should be developed for urban purposes. It's very valuable as it is. But plenty has low amenity and is very accessible to transport.